Megan, you know what I love about our partner, the Essential Calendar? I love the product so much, of course, but I also love that it comes from a small business founded by two moms.
Right, just like us. Listeners, if you're drowning in details right now, like summer camps, travel plans, end of school year mayhem, give yourself the gift of the Essential Calendar, a seasonal, at-a-glance, poster-sized calendar for your wall. Get 10% off your order at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour. That's 10% off at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 183 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hi, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
So today we are unpacking a couple of things. We are talking about this mommy wine culture and this like mommy needs a drink thing. And we're going to spend a good half of the show talking about this, but we're also going to go into other kind of mom tropes or what else would you call them, Megan? Like stereotypes or memes?
Yeah,
like,
stereotypes, memes, just our, this how weird we are about needing to make everything into like a soundbite.
Yes.
Or like a name, like
yes.
Everything a tagline. I don't know what you would call that, but we've all seen it. We all know what we're talking about.
Yes.
And Mommy Needs Wine is one of them.
Yes. So we're gonna definitely start there. If you guys didn't hear our More Than Mom episode that aired on Sunday, just a couple of days ago, usually the More Than Mom, we always say they're kind of our light and fluffy. They're not about parenting or motherhood. However, this time, I think they are a nice pairing,
yeah.
If you will, to use a drinking analogy. But we talked a lot. We talked about alcohol and drinking from a much lighter, fluffier, fun perspective. And it was really fun. We laughed a lot. We shared some stories. But we kind of felt like it was important to do this in two parts as like almost a flip side, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because, you know, I feel like there's a sense of responsibility, like, alcohol is a touchy topic, for mm-hmm. one thing. And it's hard. They're so black and white. And we can get into this in a little bit, too. But it's like there's like these two opposing sides almost, where it's like super light and fluffy, like, let's just drink all the time and be drunk all the time and blah, 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 and talk about it like we need it. Or this like alcohol bad. You
right.
Know,
like
sober, good thing.
Wearing your responsible, side. What's her name from
yes.
Guys and Dolls? Like your Sarah.
Yeah.
Like marching in the band.
Sarah Brown. Sarah
yes.
Brown was her name. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's very hard to find a middle ground. And I feel a lot of responsibility since we just did a whole episode talking about booze.
Yeah.
To kind of, you know, talk about the fact that it probably shouldn't have as huge a focus in our lives as it can.
Yeah.
And seems to sometimes, especially
yeah.
for moms. And I really want to get into this because I think some of these memes are harmful to moms. I also think some of the way that we treat drinking in this culture is unfair to moms. There's just
mm-hmm.
a lot. There's
mm-hmm.
a lot that to a lot to go into.
A lot to unpack. So, this is a
yeah.
good time to say also that today's episode is, I don't know if you have older kids or kids who are curious about this kind of thing, just maybe something to go in knowing that we're going to be talking about alcohol and drinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you make your choices from there.
Sarah, we're welcoming our sponsor, Element. That's spelled L-M-N-T, a zero-sugar electrolyte drink that leans on current science about what our bodies really need in order to deliver the most effective hydration possible. You know, Sarah, Eric is really into keeping up with health research, and he's been insisting to me for years that we actually need more salt to stay hydrated. Turns out Element agrees because they've developed their product based on a growing body of research that shows that for optimal health outcomes, we actually need to be taking in sodium levels at 2 to 3 times government recommendations. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it really is, Megan. And, you know, electrolyte deficiency or imbalances can cause headaches, cramps, fatigue, brain fog, and weakness. I know I can feel really rotten when I'm dehydrated. And also, I don't love the taste of plain water, so I'm not that great about drinking it. Element makes a huge difference in how much I'm enjoying my hydration and in how I feel, and it's super easy to fit it into my daily routine. My favorite flavor of Element is the grapefruit, but if that's not for you, we're going to get you set up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite Element flavor. Plus, Element has a no questions asked refund policy. You don't even have to send the product back to get your refund.
Yeah, you can receive a free Element sample pack containing one packet of 8 flavors. So you'll get 8 total packets free with any order when you purchase through our custom URL. That's drinkelement.com/momhour, DRINKLMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership, and it's available for both new and returning customers. To get that offer, again, go to drinkelement.com/momhour.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right. Ready?
Should we get into it? Yes.
And if you didn't listen on Sunday, that's totally fine. But we will probably reference that conversation because it's the other side of this. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want to mention too, that like, if you're not a drinker, if you don't drink, you probably will enjoy this episode anyway, because it's still such a common mom. It's just a conversation happening around
it is
public momosphere that's been going on for a while. You might not want to listen to the one from the other day, because we literally just talk about booze the entire time.
Yes, we did. Yes. And also, I think this one is important because even if it's not the mommy needs a glass of wine trope, there are other ways that we sort of pigeonhole and limit ourselves that I think is not helpful to the motherhood experience. And so that's not just about alcohol. So let's just really quickly, let's define this in case somebody is brand new to motherhood or hasn't been on social media quite as much. Like, what are we talking about, Megan? Let's define this culture.
Well, it's definitely had many manifestations. The first time I was really smacked right in the face with it, I was part of a secret Santa with a group of women I didn't know very well. It was like a writer's group or something. And the gift that my secret Santa chose to send me was an enormous wine glass, by the way, enormous. It was bedazzled.
Okay.
So it had like little gems all over it. It had like a big ribbon. And then in gel paint, it said mommy's sippy cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being so offended by it. I don't know why I was so offended. First of all, it was really tacky, but I know it was supposed to be kind of a gag gift. But at the same time, I just found the idea that there was something that was like referring to like a child's sippy cup as something you would fill, literally probably a bottle of booze would have fit into this glass. And it was like, oh, something felt really
off.
Bad about it to me. Now, I will just add a funny thing that I made that the joke, like the punishment glass.
Oh,
so if you
so funny.
Were at my house and you spilled or broke anything, you had to drink out of the mommy sippy cup.
That's awesome.
Glass. And then the person who had to use it actually ended up breaking it. So anyway, but I just, something about it bothered me. And then I started to really look around and notice that this was a meme. Like, you know, I was personally on a zoo trip with a bunch of women I didn't know very well. Again, this tends to happen. And found that they were drinking vodka out of like their sport bottles at like 10 in the morning. And
wow.
I come from a drinking family. Like, we get together and we drink, and like, alcohol has been a big part of my life. For better and for worse, I've had a lot of family members who've really struggled with it. So it's something that's always been kind of on my radar. But to me, it was always a pleasant and fun thing, not like a
secret.
I can't get through the day without this kind of a thing. And I was kind of floored by that. And I really started to notice that there was this idea that getting through the day as a mom is just too hard if you can't drink while you're doing it. And I had never until that, and this was like in my, probably right around the time I turned 30. I don't know how I missed it up until then. I had never really thought about it that way. I'd always thought that like having a drink was something fun you did with friends or that you did to enjoy yourself after the kids were in bed. I never thought of it as something that you did to survive motherhood. And it really, to me, there's so many things that are bad about it. One of the things is that it sets up you almost up against your kids, which, you know what I mean? Like, it's like my time, their time.
Yeah.
Like, who's fighting over me time and who gets full attention?
They're making me do this.
I drink because of you. And then there's obviously the health problems where if you start, you know, it's a very slippery slope at some point. And if you start boozing it up at the zoo at 10 a.m. because you can't make it through a trip to the zoo, what else are, you know, how do you escalate that? Like it comes a point where you just be drinking all the time. And I started to get really uncomfortable with it. So I don't know, Sarah, I've just babbled on for 5 minutes, but
No, I have a few things that this brought up for me. One is, okay, the mommy sippy cup and the tacky bedazzled was like how long? Like 20 years ago for you? 18, 15, 18, a long time, right?
Like I got that. Well, when I got that glass.
Yeah.
Like when it was given to me. No, that was probably 12 years ago.
Okay. Okay. I didn't know how early in motherhood. But one thing I was going to say is it's almost surprising to me that we're still doing this, except the reason why I think it keeps still coming back around is that there are always new moms. Like mothers are continually coming into this space where they are new to the experience, the ways of coping with the experience. And so there's always kind of, I don't want to say like fresh victims, but there's always a new crop of relatively insecure women who are looking for a tribe and looking for an identity and looking for humor and laughter. I'm so drawn to sarcastic humor. So there's a lot of this that comes from just a lighthearted and playful place that's meant to build community. So I think when we're unpacking this, we have to acknowledge, like, if you've ever shared one of these memes or created one or liked one, we're not judging you at all. Like, there's a reason that people relate to this stuff, and it's because motherhood is hard. It's because alcohol is one of the things that brings us together and feels celebratory, like you said. So I want to make sure like we're not coming down on anybody who's participated in this culture. I think we just want to unpack it. But going forward from there, I think one of the reasons this is problematic, and one of the things I've started to notice in people who are pushing back, is that often it's a cheap and easy substitute to say mommy needs a glass of wine, or to sell a coffee mug that says there might be wine in here. I mean, there's a lot, they're funny. Right. I've laughed at them. But to do all of that is often like kind of a cheap substitute for saying something else. And what is that something else? Is it that I'm having a hard time? Is it that, you know, I need friends? Is it that like, this is hard and I don't know how else to talk about it. And I think the problem is that there's this massive mothers out there, and some of them have no issue with alcohol whatsoever, and others are in a kind of a murkier, grayer area. And then we think of like this extreme of someone who's like drunk all day and neglecting her children, but we don't really know we don't really know how to talk about the middle, which is responsible drinking and responsible coping. It's not just about drinking, but responsible self-care, responsible dealing with the stresses of motherhood. And so
tell the difference if what you're doing is that crutch or that cheap band-aid or that cheap fix. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
But yeah. No,
we don't even know how to tell.
We don't know how to tell.
The conversation around it is so black and white.
It's so black and white. And the laughter almost normalizes behavior or gives I'm speaking for certain groups of women, and I've read some first person articles about this, but give some people permission to continue behavior that probably should be looked at. It doesn't mean they're a full blown alcoholic, but it maybe means that they have some unhealthy coping mechanisms. And this mommy needs wine culture really, in a lot of cases, has given women permission to continue in those unhealthy patterns when instead they could be getting curious about them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Totally. And I think that what you know, the problem is, it's kind of like we've talked about with lots of social media kind of stuff. Like people are sharing the same message, but you don't have any context about that person. So you don't know if the person who shares the like, oh, I really need a glass of wine, that's literally the only glass of wine she's going to have this week because she's just not a big drinker.
Right.
Or the person who needs a glass of wine, but it's like the fourth today. Mm-hmm. Like we don't have any context. We don't have any way of like separating those two. We don't have any way of really knowing where we fall as far as what's healthy and normal. And I want to mention a couple of things really quickly. I know we're going to unpack our own habits a little bit too, Sarah, but I want to mention that we have these like cultural rules around drinking that I've always felt like kind of exclude moms or don't seem to really work for moms. And one of the ones I can remember being almost kind of mad about when my kids were really little was like, don't drink alone. Mm-hmm. And my thing was like, I'm literally never alone, but I'm always alone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like
I'm never alone. that's, you know,
you have five children.
Part of the reason I can't leave my house and do something else, like go for a walk or go to therapy or, you know, go to yoga. But I'm also kind of always alone.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons, like, that drink at the end of the night can feel so tempting, because it's like, I am an adult. I do get to have, like, I do get to sit down and do something that other people who aren't stuck at home with kids maybe are doing in a different place, like in a bar or out with their friends. Like, I can do that right here. And there's something kind of exhilarating about that.
Right.
And there can be something kind of like pampering about that. And there can also be something kind of dangerous about that.
Right.
So, like, that's one of those things I always remember getting really irritated about.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so when then? Like, when am I allowed to have a glass of wine?
And why is someone else putting arbitrary rules around that?
Right. I also want to acknowledge that our culture often doesn't allow much in the way of figuring this out publicly, figuring that middle ground out. I think that there's this idea that your drinking is like 100% healthy or you don't drink at all, which is kind of what we consider to be 100% healthy, or like you're an addict and you need a 12-step program. And I think, or, you know, on the other end of like the 100% healthy, just screw it, just go for it because who cares? Like there's two, you know, those two kind of opposite sides of the coin.
Right.
And I think people then don't talk about it, honestly. And then we don't get the support we might need in like reversing a habit. Like, it's not that hard for something to go from under control and healthy to now no longer healthy. And there's a full blown addiction. And then there's people who can like go, oof, this is not good for me. What's happening right now is probably not the best course of action. I need to make a change. But we don't allow for that. Like, we don't allow for that.
No.
Place.
And just like so many things we talk about on this show, where your own personal choices, we sometimes worry that those come off as a judgment on other people. Drinking is loaded with that, right? Like, if you say that you've realized for you, it's healthier not to drink during the week or to save it for special occasions, then all of a sudden, because of this culture we've built, that now feels like a judgment against the mom who has two glasses of wine every night and handles it completely healthfully. So it is, it's hard to, like you said, it's hard to be public about those kind of gray area choices, because we also fear how that comes off as a judgment against other people.
And they're so different from everybody else. And I want to point out that we don't really do this with a lot of other habits, like exercise and food. I mean, there's so much support for making small tweaks or making an individual healthy choice. Like, I want to start eating paleo. People are going to be like, yes. And someone else is like, I want to become a vegetarian. Okay. Or like, I want to eat a little bit less, you know, every day, or like cut back on this or that. Like, we're so supportive of that. But when we start talking about alcohol, like, we don't really support things in the same way. It's like you either give it up entirely or you're part of like the drunk mom brigade. There's just not a lot of like middle ground.
That is
and
so
I think
true.
That makes people afraid to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, well, you we're going to get into this, but you and I both discovered that we were kind of having like a little bit of a detox dry week and we didn't even know. And you and I talk like 11 million times a day and we hadn't even told each other that we'd scaled back. Isn't that interesting?
Right. That is interesting. So should we get into that? Do you want to unpack our,
Ahead. Well,
you start.
Okay. Yeah. So if you listened on Sunday, we sort of lightly talked through our everyday habits around alcohol. And one of the things I talked about is I'm very structured and regimented, surprising no one, about how alcohol figures into my life when things are normal, like my weeknight, one glass of wine, my weekend, maybe two. But we also talked about like vacation and holidays and times when there's a more celebratory feel. And you and I both come from families who, you know, alcohol is a part of family get-togethers and family celebrations. So I think when I start to notice things being out of sync for me is when there has been a long period of quote unquote, like outside the norm. So whether it's travel, holidays, and we're this, it's not a coincidence that this episode is coming out Thanksgiving week. I mean, this is on our mind. So a couple of weeks ago, we had my husband turned 40. His mom came into town and she does enjoy cocktails, especially when she's traveling to see us. She's on vacation. So even though we're at home, it's like kind of habits change. And then we went right into Halloween, followed by a 4-day trip to Vegas for Brian and I, which was really fun. We went with our other couple friends, Allison and Jason, and it was Vegas. You know, it was like four parents of young kids let loose on the town. And I mean, we did Vegas like 40-year-olds, not like 20-year-olds. It was pretty tame. But you add all of that together, and it had been like 10 days of outside the norm eating and drinking. And both Brian and I just felt like it was a combination of like just wanting to get back to healthy habits, everything from exercise to eating. And so the timing of it with being close to Thanksgiving, we said, well, let's just go on like, we're not going to call it Whole 30. We're not going to like do anything crazy, but we're just going to like do our own version of a detox, both food and booze for like 2 weeks before Thanksgiving. And so all this is leading up to what you and I talked about before we recorded, which is pretty much no drinking for about 2 weeks leading up to this week. And it has been interesting. I haven't done that consciously, you know, other than being pregnant. So
yeah,
I don't know. Do you want to kind of like share where you're coming from? And
yeah, well, it's so funny. Sarah, for all the ways that we're different, like there are certain ways that we are very alike.
Yeah.
For me, a routine becomes a habit. And once it's a habit, it is ingrained and very difficult to change. I guess that's not all that different, you know, but like, yeah. I'm very routine oriented. And also I am very, I'm very swayed by what's happening around mm-hmm. me. And so I guess it's when a habit is really ingrained in me, it's hard to get out of unless the alternative is more fun. I mean, to be really honest.
Yeah.
So like if the alternative is to my usual habit is like going out every night, I'm going to start gravitating toward going out every night because that's more fun. It's more interesting. It like makes my brain go, woo, new stuff,
yeah.
new input. And you can do that for a while, but at some point that becomes not outside the norm. It becomes the new normal. And that's, you know, where I struggle the most. Like if I was in a normal routine where every day I was getting up, going to the gym, you know, or getting the kids off to school, going to the gym, doing my work, making dinner, having a glass of wine, getting tired and going to bed, then that would be a very healthy balance for me. Mm-hmm. Where it becomes problematic is when over and over and over something shakes that up. So
right.
like, it's not just like you said, it's not just one weekend, but several in a row
yeah.
or like people in from town out of town. And then everyone else around you is drinking
yeah.
and you're like, oh, or you are hanging out with new people and maybe they drink differently or at different times of day. It doesn't even have to be people who drink more than you. It could be people who drink earlier in the day.
Because mm-hmm.
then you're like, oh, well, I'll have a drink with them. And then later you're like, well, I'll have a drink when I usually would have.
Yep.
And suddenly you're like, wait, I just had three times as many drinks as
right.
I usually would have in a day. And that's
right.
very easy. It's easy to let that creep in.
Yep.
I will say that both the times I have been single, I have, people don't always know this, but John and I actually split up once when we were very early in our marriage
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, recently divorced. So the last 2 years I've been, you know, divorced mom. And then back in my 20s, early 20s,
mm-hmm.
I was. And I drank more during that time, both times, for very different reasons, though. When I was single the first time, it was because I was just stressed. And
mm-hmm.
like, I was alone a lot and I didn't have people to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I was like home with my kids. They were little. I didn't go out ever. So for me, having, you know, a couple glasses of wine at night while I played around on the internet was kind of like my cocktail hour.
Right.
And I
yeah.
felt like I was out with people. I
yeah.
felt like I was out, but I was really just at home.
Yeah.
This last time around, my kids were older and my ex and I have shared custody. So
right.
he's got the kids about half the time.
Yeah.
I just have more opportunity.
Yeah.
And people are asking me to come out a lot. And for a while there, it was kind of like, you know, there's like this little rush at first. You're like, oh my gosh, I can go out as much as I want
right.
to. And I can, you know, be out all the time. And then after a while you get tired of that and you realize like, that's not sustainable and you can't really do it forever. But it's just interesting to me that both of those times of my life were probably the heaviest drinking phases for very different reasons. And now I've been dating someone for a couple of months and I kind of went through another spike because now it's a new relationship. It's
yeah.
fun. Every
yeah.
time we get together, it's like a free pass, like a free for all for us to go out and like celebrate and have a good time. And like, you know, maybe he would have had a drink like at 8 o'clock and I would have had one at 5 or whatever. So
right.
now we're having one at 8 and at 5
yeah.
and sometimes in between. So it's like all, so it's just interesting when I get out of my usual routine, how I can see that things aren't in it for a little while. I'm like, oh, it's fine. It'll pass. And then there always comes a point where I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to do something.
So let me ask you a question then about that do something, because
sure.
I know how my brain really likes rules. So for me, it's relatively
yeah.
easy to say, you know, okay, what I feel best if I only have one glass of wine on the weeknights. And that's been my reality for years and years and years. You know, even when I had little babies, I never had more than one because I just didn't like it. I didn't like the way I felt in the morning. And I was often getting up in the middle of the night, blah, blah, blah. So it's like once I have a rule for myself, I'm pretty good at following it. I'm curious if when you realize like, okay, something needs to shift here. Is that the way? Do you just think, okay, I'm going to be mindful and I'm going to scale back? Or does it help to have like a now here's the new parameters for a while?
You know, I am such a rebel. I do not like rules. What I have found works the best for me is to set up the rest of my life in such a way that it just changes.
Like I like that.
So, and it doesn't have to be, it can be temporary. Like, it might mean going to yoga in the evenings during the time that I would have wanted to have several drinks. Mm-hmm. And I do that instead. Or it might mean turning down invitations to go out because I just know if I just turn down invitations, I will naturally not drink or whatever it is. Like to me, it's almost like I have to set up outside, the outside framework or structure around the choice to make the choice like make itself.
And I'm going to jump in really quick with Gretchen Rubin's four tendencies, because you have, you know, kind of identified as a rebel. But what you're doing is like you're setting up your environment so that it feels like your choice and not a rule that's imposed on you. And so that suits your rebel tendency, which is exactly what you should be doing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And but it takes, you know, it took me a while to figure that out. Like it took me a while to figure out, like, why is it when I have times of my life when I'm just not drinking much, like what happened? Like what, because I didn't even notice it happening. What is different? And then I realized, oh, well, I was going to bed earlier. I was probably getting up a little earlier. Mm-hmm. I was doing more active things in the evening. I wasn't going out as much. I was hanging out with different people. Like all these things that have to happen. If I just said to myself like, oh, I'm not going to drink anymore during the week ever, then I would break that rule the first day.
Yeah.
Cause I'd be mad at myself for even making it. Now I will say that, the guy that I'm dating, we actually had a conversation about this and was like, yeah, we're kind of like drinking way too much. And like, we just don't want to do that all the time for a variety of reasons. And so his suggestion was to have like, you know, days that we do and days that we don't. And because I'm not doing it alone, it's a little easier to stick to that. But I don't know that that would be something that I would do forever. Like, I don't know that forever that's the right option for me. I just think right now it's fine. Like if I'm with him, we could just find other stuff to do.
Yeah.
But like when I'm by myself, I'm kind of, again, the rebel part of me wants to be like, well, wait a second.
Yeah.
Like I should get to make my own rules about this and then break my own rules about this. So I do have to kind of fight a little bit with my tendencies. And the funny thing is, Sarah, when I really think about wanting it, it's not always for the same reasons. And that's the other thing too. Like, I think that we need to like even unpack that. Like if you really want a glass of wine, like why? Mm-hmm. What is it you really want? Do you want a break?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want something that tastes good? Do you want a buzz? Like there's lots of different reasons you might want that thing that have like, that don't have to be, they don't have to happen with that thing, but we're just so used to it. And it's such a habit.
I had an observation about that since we did stop drinking the last couple of weeks is I thought that when I would miss my glass of wine would be the moment where I sit down on the couch. The kids are upstairs. We talked about this in our Sunday episode.
Yeah.
Just that ritual of like, we watch a show and reaching over for my glass of wine. That's when I predicted that I would miss it. What I found was that when I would start thinking about that glass of wine and feeling bummed I wasn't going to get it, was it about 6:30, like about an hour, hour and a half before when I,
it was something you were looking forward to.
Because I was looking forward to it and I would feel kind of grumpy and be like, oh, I'm not even going to like enjoy the show, blah, blah, blah. I've got to get through this bedtime and there's no glass of wine waiting. And then when I sat down and we turned on our show and I had either nothing or maybe like a LaCroix or a glass of water, I didn't miss it at all. Not at all.
Isn't that funny?
So I think
it's the anticipation of it that you miss.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I think it's the predictability. I love routine and predictability that it's like a physiological comfort to me to know what's coming. And so if you take away the thing that's usually coming, then it feels like, like I'm like unmoored or something. It's not like I was like in a corner crying about it, but found it interesting.
It's what you're used to.
Yeah. And the time that I missed it was a different time of day than I thought I would. Because
I agree.
I was fine.
Yeah. I miss it earlier than like I miss the missing of it. Like I miss it. I miss what I think I'm going to miss. And then if I just like do something else, by the time I get back to where I would have had it, I don't care anymore. It's that weird like inner, it's the right before.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do like, I've tried stupid things like, I'll drink, you know, tea out of a wine glass or something like that. And there is something I really do like about holding a wine glass. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a bad idea. I just, for me, that's not really the thing. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's like finding something completely different to do during that time, really take my mind off of it. So going for a walk or going to yoga or going shopping, like just some other little thing that, like, you know, a lot of it is boredom. Being a mom can be really boring. Mm-hmm. And we look for stimulus. We look for ways to make our brain go, like, something interesting is happening. We want novel experiences. And even if they're predictably novel, they're still novel. Mm-hmm. It still tastes good. It still feels good. And, like, I feel like sometimes we start to, like, forget there's other ways to do that.
Yep.
Because this one way is so easy and it's always available.
And to, like, bring this back to the whole mommy needs wine culture and tie it up with a bow before our break, it's culturally acceptable. Like, if you were, I read several essays and articles kind of reminding myself of this cultural thing, and I will link them all up in the show notes. But more than one kind of pointed out that alcohol is unique in that it is so widely culturally acceptable that you can be pretty unhealthy and have it be like publicly totally fine, be totally publicly accepted. Whereas if you were smoking a joint at 5 o'clock every day or engaging in other potentially risky, potentially self-destructive behavior, that people would stage an intervention.
Right.
But there's several essays that I'll link to that talked about, you know, they were never drunk. They were never passing out around their kids. They were, you know, showing up on time. They were, like, their hair was brushed. Like, there were no outward signs of a problem. And because of this cultural acceptance of boozing to cope with life, then that can fly under the radar for a long time. Like, and then I think what it does is it gives people a reason not to question their behavior. Because if it doesn't look like this sort of, like, after school special picture of an alcoholic mom, then I must be fine. And maybe you are. Like, you might be fine, but maybe there is something to unpack.
Well, and I think that too, I mean, there's no way to know, but I almost get the feeling that the people who are really struggling are the ones consuming that message more than the ones putting it out there, and the ones putting it out there. It's very easy to talk about drinking if you don't have a drinking problem.
I agree.
Like, you know what I mean? And then it becomes like, if you think you're in a place where you're, you know, maybe pushing that line, it's trickier. Like, you start to feel self-conscious.
Yes.
And I don't know too many people who I would say drink really heavily in a really unhealthy way who are also talking a lot about it.
I agree.
Because I just 100%. Think that's part of the shame and the weird, like, undergroundness of it.
Yeah.
And the, like, fear that if they say something, if they ever said out loud to anybody, like, gosh, you know, I think I maybe drink a little too much.
Yeah.
Then they're going to be, like, put in rehab or something. Like, and there's so many steps before that. And I just wish, like, that we could have a little bit more of a nuanced conversation about that.
Okay. So before we take a break, this is a good time to mention one of my favorite online bloggers who I've been reading, I don't know, for 10 years probably, is named Aidan Donnelly Rowley. She's also a novelist. She's a New York City mom. She has 3 girls. And so I read her blog. It used to be called Ivy League Insecurities. And I've
read her forever.
I'd have read her forever, way before she started talking about drinking. And then probably 3 or 4 years ago, she did something called A Year Without Wine. Anyway, I won't have this be a long thing, but the point is she never approached drinking as, like, I'm an alcoholic and I have to quit. It was always from this, like, I'm not sure I'm the same when I'm drinking wine as I want to be. And I'm curious about it and I'm going to write about it. And she wrote extensively about it. She did a whole year without wine kind of experiment that she blogged through. Then she started drinking a little bit again. And eventually she did decide to be totally dry, but it was from the most, kind of like the opposite of what you think when you hear about, like, a mom who stops drinking. It was very gradual and very, like, self-discovery and totally non-judgmental. I don't think she refers to herself as an alcoholic at all. I don't think her drinking ever got out of control, but she has a podcast about it called Edit. And then she has a Instagram called the Drybe Club, D-R-Y-B-E Club. So it's like dry and tribe together. And she's kind of built this whole following around people who aren't saying that they're an alcoholic or they need to quit, but they just want to examine and get curious about the role that alcohol plays. And so she's my favorite person. If you just want to, like, really think about this very thoughtfully, she has great blog posts. She has a podcast. She has a separate Instagram. And so I'll link that up in the show notes.
I loved her approach because I loved that it was a year and not the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt like something like anybody could emulate or even emulate in a smaller way just to see. And I loved how much she talked about being present. I remember that was like a big thing for her. Like, am I really present in my life? Am I really experiencing my life? And I think, you know, anybody who's not done things they'd rather do.
Yes.
I think for me, like the times when I've backed off, it's been because I realized I wasn't doing something I would rather do because I was prioritizing that.
Uh-huh.
And that could mean because I want to be sitting on my couch at 6 o'clock with a drink, or that could mean because I went out with friends last night and we had a couple too many and now I can't get to the gym. Like, whatever it is, there's always something. And once routinely the one thing impacts the other, then it's when it's not like a problem with a capital P, like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to go to AA. It's like a thing to look at.
Yep, absolutely. And just like you said earlier on, it's funny that we're so this way about alcohol when it's fine to talk very publicly about getting on any kind of other health kick. So I think that was really insightful.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're going to move on. This is a really good discussion. I'm really loving this. But let's kind of broaden this to like meme culture in general. I think where I want to start, Megan, is because I always like your perspective, having been a mom for 20 years and how you have seen
21 years.
21 years.
Jacob turned 21. Can you believe that?
Yes. I mean, no. Is he already 21? Did I miss it?
He turned 21 on the 10th.
Oh, I missed it. I usually kind of have a radar. You didn't post on social media about it.
I didn't post on social about it. I know. That day was busy and like he was just like, I didn't get a good picture of it or whatever.
So and he's 21. So
and he's 21. Like he had his own crap going on. So we had breakfast together, but he had his own.
Yeah.
Thing with his
life,
that
his
night.
Own life.
Life, exactly.
But okay, with 21 years in you, I would love to hear like how you've seen, this isn't a new thing. Like we have new social platforms for memes to be circulated and tropes to be furthered, but you've probably seen this for a long time. Are there one or two that stand out as this kind of like mommy needs wine? Are there other kind of potentially problematic tropes that have cropped up over the years for you?
Yeah. I mean, I just think in general, like the slacker mom thing was big when I want to say 10, 15 years ago. And I know now that's the hot mess mom, right? Mm-hmm. But like, it was just this idea that like the slacker mom, like there was this whole thing around being the slacker mom's the mom who doesn't do any of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The slacker mom's the mom who's kind of mean. The slacker mom's the mom who probably has a drink in her hand and isn't making the Halloween costume from scratch or isn't making brownies for the classroom or whatever it is, you know? And I always hated that idea that we had to be one or the other, like the type A mom or the slacker mom. First of all, I think we're all in some ways both.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of room for us to choose what area we're going to be one or the other. And why do we have to pigeonhole ourselves? Like, I never liked that. It always bothered me. To some degree, maybe like the crunchy mom thing, also kind of had it. I don't see that as much now, but maybe I'm just not looking in the right places.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been around.
Well, what occurs to me is the way we consume this now is like GIFs and Instagram and all of that. And I mean, who knows? 10 years ago, it was other things, blog posts and Twitter and whatever else it was. But
and before that, it was books and articles. I mean, like this stuff goes way back.
Way back. But I guess like a good litmus test for me is if you read something, kind of chuckle and it makes you feel like either good because you identify and it justifies something that you've like, that's like kind of a little bit icky, but you feel like now you're justified. Or if it makes you feel excluded because you're totally not in that club at all, it's probably an oversimplified mom trope.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
We don't share things on Instagram that include everyone. It just doesn't happen. They don't get likes and shares. It's right. usually something that pigeonholes or subdivides us. And I think that's what deserves unpacking today, is like, why do these things perpetuate themselves, and why it's maybe problematic to have that be the lens through which we view motherhood.
Well, and I think everybody wants to identify with somebody, and everybody wants to feel like part of a tribe, right? So mm-hmm. it makes a certain amount of sense, but the problem is that there's really not such a thing as a slacker mom tribe. What would that even look like? Like, would it just be a bunch of moms?
It wouldn't be very organized.
No, would it be just like a bunch of moms who don't do anything at all? Like, I mean, or like type A moms, like what would that look like? Like how weird would it be if, you know, everybody, if there was like a group of moms who identified themselves that way, and then like, what does that mean? Okay. So you do everything right. Like what, like, you know what I'm saying? Like there's mm-hmm. there's these weird, it creates a dichotomy that doesn't exist in real life.
And yes.
I do think it's gotten, this is one of the unfortunate, and I think there's many amazing things about the internet and social media, but I think it's one of the unfortunate side effects. Like it sort of takes like humanness mm-hmm. out of it. I'm thinking I'm going to go back in time and I'm going to look at a show like Roseanne.
Okay.
Now I know that Roseanne has gone off the deep end, but I'm going to talk about the
1990s
version of Roseanne. I feel like she was like an embodiment of kind of a slacker mom, mm-hmm. but she was a real human being. Mm-hmm. And the show showed the whole spectrum, which is mm-hmm. why it was so good. Like mm-hmm. why it was so successful. It was her being normal, but loving her kids. And sometimes she got stuff right, but she didn't do things the way like a lot of the more put together moms did. She was kind of a slacker mom. Like she mm-hmm. was kind of the embodiment of a slacker mom, but like a whole human, mm-hmm. but a whole mm-hmm. person, as much of a whole human as you could fit into 30 minutes of television. And I think we're starting to kind of lose that. Even the programming I've seen, and I don't watch a lot of television anymore, I have to say, but some of the shows I've seen that feature moms, I feel like they've, even the moms in the shows have become more stereotypical, mm-hmm. which maybe is just my interpretation of it. But like in a show like Modern Family, like mm-hmm. everybody has their type, mm-hmm. their part mm-hmm. that they're playing. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot, they're not really allowed to go outside of that much. And I've noticed that. And it makes it kind of, it makes it a cheap laugh. It's easy to laugh at, but boring. And it's, you don't get emotionally invested the same way. I don't, at least.
I totally agree. And it also sets up this idea that you're in the club or you're out, and that like people have to hang with like. So the hot mess moms need to hang, you know, need to stick together to defend themselves from like the perfectionist moms or whatever.
Right.
But in reality, don't you feel like as someone who leans type A, I really need people around me to show me examples of not overachieving. I need people around me to like tone me down. So on the internet, the internet wants me to think that like I belong in this bucket with other people like me. But in the real world, I more than anything need other types of human beings around me to balance me out. And I think we're all like that. So it sort of robs us of this experience of, like you said, seeing the depth behind one particular person, but also making sure that we're surrounding ourselves with different types of moms who approach things to, I love when I have like a friend who's super crunchy and naturalistic, and like I vibe off of that a little bit. And then somebody who's really, really relaxed and low key. And then somebody who's like super ambitious in their career. Like I see that as a benefit to me as a mom and a person and a woman and a human, but the meme culture would suggest that you've got to like find your people and then stick with them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I totally, totally agree. And I mean, you said it. So like, I guess what's the way around that? Because I find that I need to be around more organized people, more people who are driven in a different way than I am, and just all that. Like, I think that's why our friendship and this partnership works so well. And that's why people identify with it, is because I think people tend to see themselves as you. I have to say, I always think it's funny how many emails we get that say, the likelihood that someone will email us and say they identify with Sarah is like at a rate of probably 5 to 1 at least.
No one ever emails us
and says they're a Megan. Ever.
So number one, like side note, that's a challenge. If you are a Megan out there, please tell us.
You're probably just not bothering to write.
Or we've talked about this. Like what I said to you is I think the Megans aren't even necessarily seeking out parenting podcasts.
Oh, or like, yeah, because I wouldn't. Yeah. I wouldn't have listened to us. I'm sorry.
So, but that is funny. But that is a side note because I know there are Megans out there. One time, a long time ago, I asked on Facebook and it wasn't 10 to 1. It was maybe like 65-35 or something.
Right.
But, okay. That's really funny. But I think you asked, so what do we do? Like, what is.
Yeah. What do we do?
So
yeah.
I think I do have a couple of ideas. One is to be just become like a conscious consumer of the media that you're consuming and look for all of these things. I mean, we started the show talking about the mommy needs wine, you know, culture, but look for things that that narrowly define a group of people. And that's everything from culturally, socioeconomically, like look, be critical. And even when it's humor, because I'm someone who's, like I said, I'm easily drawn to humor. I love cheap shot. I mean, I love wit. I really do. Mm-hmm. And so, but get critical even of the humor that you're consuming. And I think just start to like peek behind and see if this is justifying a behavior or masking a bigger issue, or if it's just like, it's probably harmless. Like the one meme that you shared, I'm sure is totally harmless, but if that's all anybody sees, I don't think that's harmless. And I think sometimes it's masking a bigger kind of identity issue. So number one, I think is just to be a more, astute consumer of whatever media you consume, whether it's television, podcasts, Instagram, whatever. And then, I mean, I think we always come down to this when we talk about social media, but making an effort to increase your real life, real world connections. And that doesn't have to mean like going out to coffee with a friend once a week if you don't have time for that, but it can mean like a phone call to an old friend rather than just, you know, Facebook conversations with someone at a more superficial level. I think there's lots of ways to make sure that our roots in deeper relationships are getting nurtured and not just substituting that with the more superficial.
Yeah, those are really good. And I think that I think it's the criticalness. And of course, you know, I can't think of any off the top of my head, of course, but like it's not just limited to motherhood stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, like there's ones on ethnic culture and race. There's ones on like basic, you know, be blank, 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 blank. There's like all these things that like, that we say and they're funny and I'm just as guilty. Like that's so basic.
Yeah.
But then what does that mean? We're all basic in some way.
Yeah.
Like we all, like everybody either wears Uggs or drinks, you know, Starbucks, or like, it would be very hard for me to find a group of like a single person who doesn't do any of the things.
Right. Right. Who doesn't participate in culture. I mean, I think that makes you a sociopath, right? Like if you're not, like if you're not participating in like the identity of the culture that you're in, that would make you very strange. So we're all doing it, but needing to, I think what you're saying, like trying to attach too much or not enough significance on it is tough.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not sure I have anything more to say to that.
I think we're good. What would we like to hear from our listeners on this? Because this is a big topic, and I think we probably didn't cover some things. So what
I'm
if you could ask for some emails or some feedback, what would you want people to let us know?
I think that I would really, honestly, I honestly would love to, I know this is a very sensitive thing. I would love to hear from people who, because I always want to be sensitive to this stuff, right? Like who struggle in some way to find out like what kind of stuff is triggery to them. So let's say that you are not drinking or you're trying to cut back. Like what would help you and what don't you want to hear?
Right.
I mean, we probably aren't going to do another whole episode on booze again for a while, but like, I would just like to know like what ways are other moms talking about things that are helpful or problematic or whatever. And I don't know, like maybe just share your stories with us. Like, I feel like it's something that's so personal.
Yeah.
We're not going to take a screenshot and put your name out there.
No.
Yeah.
In fact, like, that's a good point. Like if people wonder, like if you want to email us just to vent and don't want, you know, don't ever want us to mention it even generally, I mean, just let us know. Like we're safe with us.
I want to know what other people's experiences are. It's not something we talk about as honestly as you and I just have, Sarah. And my guess is there's going to be people who listen who are very uncomfortable by the conversation we just had. Mm-hmm. I know that because it's an uncomfortable thing that people have a hard time talking about.
Yeah.
And because we have such a wide array of approaches to alcohol. I know there's going to be people listening who think that we're too blasé and who think that we are too light about it and probably think we are problem drinkers. And there's probably going to be people who are like, oof, they think like, you know, a couple glasses of wine a night might be a problem, but what the heck? Like, that's not a problem for me. So like, I think that like, it's such a wide spectrum. And I know that it probably is going to create some discomfort. And I guess I would just ask that, like, you know, like, I don't know, just be thoughtful about it. And that's all. When you, not just when you respond to us, but when you interact with other moms and other people and the way you portray yourself as a mom.
Yeah. I would love to hear if there's anybody, and there's no shame in this, but if there's anybody who honestly had not thought twice about mommy wine culture or the hot mess mom memes and kind of now is like thinking, oh, like there is a different side to this. I'd love to hear that because I think you and I, Megan, have been immersed in media around motherhood for a long time. So sometimes I think we think things are obvious when they're not necessarily if you didn't work in our industry. So I would love to hear that. I'd love to hear if there are other, because you and I are also not exactly millennials and we're not probably up on the latest. So I'd also love to hear if there's any
not exactly millennials. Oh, that was generous.
I'd love to hear if there are any sort of tropes that we didn't bring up that are another problematic, you know, stereotype or trope that is floating around out there that we didn't bring up. So send us all of the emails and tell us what you think in honestly and kindly, hopefully. Our email is hello@themomhour.com. Before we wrap, I also want to give a special shout out to our sponsor for this month, Spangler Science Club. It's a monthly subscription kit with hands-on STEM-themed experiments for kids 5 to 12. And we just unboxed November's kit. It's all about pH testing, and my kids had so much fun. So look for more on Spangler on our website at themomhour.com and more coming up on the podcast soon.
All right. I guess we'll wrap and see you guys next time.
All right.
Sarah, I started a Substack last spring, just kind of as an experiment, and it turns out I love it. I'm treating it kind of like an old school blog, writing about things that are happening in my life.
Megan, I've loved following your stuff on Substack, and I actually just really like Substack in general.
You know, we've both been a lot less active on Instagram lately, and I'm finding that Substack scratches that itch to connect and create without all the busyness of a typical social media feed. So I would love it if Mom Hour listeners wanted to look me up there. I'm at meganfrancis.substack.com, and that's Megan with two A's, meganfrancis.substack.com. Sarah, I have been having just the best time making my new podcast, The Teas Made. I launched back in November, and so far I've covered topics like staying warm on cold winter walks, nurturing creativity, how to be a great host, and even Nordic secrets to loving winter.
Well, you know I am fan number one of The Teas Made. It's got such a cozy vibe, and it seems like you've really hit your stride in covering topics like wellness, self-care, comforting rituals and routines, and home and family life.
Just look for The Teas Made with Megan Francis wherever you get your podcasts, or head to theteasmade.com to find all the episodes.